Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm not really interested in money at all. Like I think I'm interested in freedom.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Mike Mortlock, the Managing Director of MCG Quantity Surveyors. You'll hear how he transitioned from the country life to the city life, how he became interested in property during his university years, and the events that unfolded after purchasing his first property, and much, much more. Hey! We start off by hearing about what Mike Mortlock's day-to-day role is.
I'm the Managing Director of MCG Quantity Surveyors, so I guess my background is I'm a little freckled kid from country New South Wales, moved to sort of as big a smoke as I could stomach to Newcastle when I was about 16 or 17. And yeah, I guess the day-to-day is running the MCG Quantity Surveyors team, specifically on the tax side. That's my specialty, with my business partner, Marty, who's more on the traditional sort of estimating side.
As the Managing Director of MCG Quantity Surveyors, he goes on to explain how the name of the business came about and what it stands for.
It's the worst story, honestly. And, you know, and it's kind of, it's painful too, because you get people ringing up saying, I left my hat there. I'm like, you didn't leave it here. You're talking about the MCG, the cricket ground, right? So the actual name of the company is M Consulting Group, like the letter M, because we thought, oh, you know, that's like Bond, is like the BMW M Sport. I'm Mark. I'm Mike. I don't even know my name. I'm Mike. He's Marty. You know, so there's like, I'm Mike Mall, MM, you know, like, so it's just like M Consulting Group, because we thought, like, you know, maybe we'll do something else. We don't just want to be talking about our specialty. And then M Consulting Group is MCG, so it's MCG Quantity Surveyors. I wish it was a better story, honestly.
Luckily, it's not the MCG that we're getting confused about.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, they are very difficult to out SEO. If you search MCG, you're not going to find us.
Mortlock delves into what a typical day in his life looks like.
It's changed a lot since we started, because in starting the business, we started from our bedroom. So day one, I was doing everything. But now, you know, it's more the ivory tower stuff. It's no real work, you know.
It's for all your workers.
Yeah. I've got the easy job. I mean, it's mostly just kind of overseeing things from a strategy point of view, relationship building and media and blogging and all that sort of stuff. So, just what you would expect of a small business that's trying to grow and looking after the team and the relationships we've got with people that put their support in us.
He goes on to share how he initially started MCG Quantity Surveyors.
I got to the point where there wasn't really sort of much further that I could go in that business. The guys that started it, they've sort of since left, but at that time they were sort of beginning their transition to leaving the business. That, you know, I would ask a question and we're like, oh, one of the directors in the south of France, the other one's in Bali, so we've got to wait till they come back to get an answer. I'm like, and there was a level of management above me, but there was no way for me to sort of make myself known to sort of progress. So I kind of thought, I've learned everything that I could here. There were certain parts about the culture that changed over the years, which, I didn't enjoy. I had more fun in the beginning and I just hated being stale and I hated being bored. So I left there, got a consulting gig in the rail industry, just like to pay the bills, and then sort of started building the systems that I needed to start the business with my business partner, Marty, and we just kind of went from there.
Fantastic. And how long has it been running for now?
2011 we started. So we're coming up to 10 years.
I have seen your practice for quite a while, actually. I mean, when I first started in property, I did see your brand around a while, you know, with all the other quantity surveyors. And there's not that many in the market, actually. You know, it's mostly you guys at the top too.
We're definitely not the biggest. I think depending on who you talk to, we might be, you know, one of the more prolific from a content point of view. So easy to see us around. And we definitely try and do that. We're trying to lead from the front. Whilst we might not be the biggest, we kind of think that, you know, leading from the front is more about the initiatives that we're doing, you know, like industry first data releases and education and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, we're having a lot of fun, really enjoying it. And yeah, there's a bit of competition out there and there's a few new players in the marketplace, but yeah, we've got our own little niche and yeah, we're happy with it.
Before delving more into the property side of things, Mortlock shares a bit about his upbringing.
I was born in Penrith and I left when I was two. My parents brought me. That wasn't sort of a solo trip, of course. And I moved to Yerong Creek, which is such a small town that it shouldn't even really exist. It's basically two tumbleweeds bumping together, and that's the town. It's sort of near Wagga Wagga. And so I went to primary school there. So from 2 to about 11, I was elected the primary school captain at the end of year 5, just as we had to leave. So I never served a day in office, I like to say. I got the badge. They did give me the school captain's badge, but I never actually got to do it. So I then moved to Griffith, which interestingly, both those places are, you know, within about 200K of your first investment in West Wyalong. And in that area of the world, 200K is just kind of like a milk run, you know, like that's not a big distance.
Very true. I remember when I went out towards that way, I was like, oh gosh, it's just space after space.
It's just flat. Yeah. And yeah, so I mean, Wagga, Griffith, similar sort of places, and then moved to a place called Caves Beach, which is sort of between Newcastle and the Central Coast. When I was about 16, and I've hovered around the same sort of Lake Macquarie, Newcastle area ever since.
He explains the reason why his parents decided to move to a different location during his younger years.
The reason for going to the country to begin with is my parents thought that would be a great place to start a family. And then moving from Wagga to Griffith was my old man getting a different job in the company that he was working for. And then, yeah, basically we moved to the coast because I had a lot of health issues growing up. I had some chemical sensitivities and I had chronic fatigue syndrome. It's the sort of place where a dust storm could nearly take your life away because dust it's not like the normal dust that you would see in a city. And, you know, and the crop dusters would spray over the top of your head and it just kind of wasn't my jam. My body was not really enjoying it. So, we moved to the coast, sea breeze. And, you know, I remember at the time my sister was furious at me leaving all of her friends. And now I sort of make fun of her saying like, you could be living there still right now. And she's like, oh, thank God for that.
He shares whether the move to the coast benefited his health problems and was the reason why he stayed there for a long time.
I don't know necessarily that if it's the reason why I've stayed there, like from a health point of view. My health sort of started to get pretty well once I became sort of like a later teenager or young adult. But yeah, like it made a big difference. And, you know, honestly, moving from the country to the coast, like there's something about the coast now. Like I would feel like psychologically sort of privated in a way if I wasn't near the ocean. Now I might only dunk myself in it once every 3 years, but just knowing that I could go there this afternoon just makes me feel nice.
It's a completely different perspective. It's just nicer to be next to the water. I used to live where my parents used to live by the water as well. And it's just nice to wake up and look out and go, wow, this is fresh air and water and so forth like that, compared to being in the suburbs, which is, I don't mind that. It's great for family and stuff like that. But it is becoming very, very, guess, dense out this way, you know, with all the suburbs and so many buildings and so forth. So it's, yeah, different lifestyle altogether.
Lake Macquarie is great because, I mean, it's compared to Sydney, which is where most of, I guess, our business is in Sydney. I'm like, we probably do more in Brisbane and Melbourne individually than we do like in the Newcastle area. It just happens to be where we live. But, you know, property is cheap. It's getting up there, but you can buy a place that's two or three times the size as you could in a similar suburb of Sydney. And, you know, like for someone who is kind of like a country kid at heart, this is like all you need. Like if I feel like Ethiopian tonight, I can get it, you know? That doesn't happen when you live in Griffith. It's like, do you want fish and chips or do we just get the sausages?
Mortlock shares how he adapted to the change of living in the country to then the city.
It was a huge culture shock, but the entity that suffered the most was our Kelpie named Sam. He went from 50 acres to, you know, 720 square meters. And he struggled more than anybody. That was a bit sad, so we had to make sure we took him on lots of adventures. But yeah, look, it was a massive culture shock, and it wasn't just, you know, moving from the wide open spaces to more of like a suburban style setup. It was also kind of like the people. Like I remember in high school, people getting teased for being poor. And when I went to high school in a place called Swansea, one of the guys I was friends with, Tim, people used to pay him out for being rich. It's like, oh, your dad's Microsoft shares must be going really well. And I'm like, this is the complete opposite. Like what is happening? I don't know. What is right and what's wrong now? Being rich or poor or something? I guess, you know, kids try to pick on you for whatever they can. But yeah, it's just a different mindset. Like, it was more about wealth in the country than it was the city. That one just took me by surprise.
It is a complete opposite. So people in the country were talking more about wealth than they were in the city. That is completely, a surprise to me. I would not have ever expected that to hear that from.
Another thing with being in Griffith too is like, I've sort of, you know, got the privileged sort of background of being sort of like the most anonymous person on earth, really. Like I'm kind of like English, Irish stock, you know, typical white dude. But in Griffith, I was kind of like a minority because most people were Italian. And that was kind of like weird because I realized that, oh, no, wait, like here in Swansea, like there's no Italian people. Like, and that took to some, I guess, getting used to.
Reflecting on when he finished high school, he shares whether he continued studying or delved into the workforce.
When I did year 11 and 12 at high school, I did part-time. So I was doing three subjects of the six year 11 and then three subjects of the six year 12. That was really just a health reason to reduce that study load, which like I look back and have sort of regrets on that. I wish that never happened. So what actually happened then is I hadn't finished the HSC when I was supposed to in 2000 or whatever it was. So I ended up going to TAFE to finish the HSC in 2 years. So I did the three subjects of year 11 and the three subjects of year 12 in 1 year somehow. And then it just so happened that the HSC finished mid-year, and it's kind of like, well, you can't do nothing till the end of the year. You don't sort of really have a plan. Like all I wanted to do growing up was to be a fighter pilot, but with being on full-time medication, it was just that there was no chance. I mentioned my mate Tim before. He was my sort of best mate growing up, and he had epilepsy. So we were both like in the garage doing flexed arm hangs, trying to get the Air Force, you know, requirements. But it was the saddest thing in the world because neither of us had a chance. You cannot be an epileptic and be a fighter pilot, and I couldn't do it either. So I was pretty rudderless, and I kind of thought, well, you know, I'll look at the stuff that the TAFE was offering, and I ended up doing a real estate course. Now, I know that you can sort of, it seems like you can do one in the weekend these days, but I did a diploma that actually took a year. So it was like 9 till 3, 4 days a week or something. And that was a year. So that was enough for me to be a licensee. I just thought, well, all right, I'll go and do that because I sort of was interested in property, but I'd love to say there was more strategy to it than that. It's embarrassing to admit, but like it was pretty rudderless.
Coming up after the break, we hear about how Mike Mortlock became more interested in property during his studies.
My motto was P's get degrees, but with the Master of Property, I was more sort of like 90% plus average just because I was far more interested in it.
The first property he ever purchased?
I purchased my first property in a place called Waratah, which is sort of like right near the Newcastle Uni area, which has done like pretty well from a capital growth point of view for that reason.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Sharm and you're listening to Property Investory. Mortlock reflects on what he did after completing his studies at TAFE.
I don't like to admit this, but yeah, I finished my TAFE on a Friday and I started a real estate job on the Monday. So I timed that like a champion. I would have liked a couple of weeks off, to be honest, but you know, I was kind of thinking, all right, well, you know, I'm all grown up now, I better go and do something. And I had an illustrious, I think, 10-month real estate career. I would say that I categorically failed, really because I still am, but back then definitely was a very sort of paralyzed introvert. So like in running a business and doing, you know, podcasts and TV and stuff like that, you kind of have to, you have to either get over it or you will crash and burn. You know, you can't sort of go to someone and they say, you know, why should I work with you? And you go, oh, I don't really know. But like I'm an introvert. In my own time, I'll read a book and like to be left alone. But you can't be an introvert and be a really good real estate agent. I mean, maybe there are some analytical people that people just kind of want to work with because that's who they are as well. But it just didn't suit me at all. And there were some aspects of it where I kind of thought, like, I don't think that's the right thing to do. And then the boss would sort of say, but like, that's what I need you to do. I'm like morally kind of thinking, this is a bit grim. So I ended up thinking, I like property. What is kind of going to give me the property stuff that I like with none of the sales, people, all that sort of stuff? And I ended up studying valuation. I went back to TAFE and I was studying at night school. And I think my girlfriend at the time said, like, you're a bum. How come you've got no money? And I thought, oh, I better get a job or that she's going to ditch me. She's not my wife at the moment, but that's, you know, that's a side issue. I say at the moment, like I'm going through wives. I was doing it at night school and I ended up getting a job in a quantity surveying firm whilst I was doing the night school stuff. And I got probably like maybe about 75% through, and they changed it and they were going all to online instead of the classroom stuff. And I kind of was a bit lazy thinking, I don't know if I really want to do that. The quantity surveying firm convinced me to change over to a Bachelor of Construction Management and get credits for that. It turns out I got zero credits and had to start from scratch, and I basically abandoned an advanced diploma of real estate being a valuer. And then I've gone back and I've done Masters of Property and I've done 5/8 of that, which is again like deferred because I've been busy. The business got busy. So I've twice tried to be a qualified valuer and haven't quite got there. But I'm sure I'll go back and do the Masters. I've only got 3 subjects to go.
I was going to say third time lucky, I'm pretty sure you'll finish it. You'll get that.
I think I started that in 2011 or something. It's funny, like I didn't do terribly well in the Bachelor of Construction Management. You know, my motto was P's get degrees. But with the Master of Property, I was more sort of like 90% plus average just because I was far more interested in it. It was much more sort of valuation economics, like property economics style than nuts and bolts construction. Like this is kind of the thermal mass of Hebel, you know, like I just couldn't care less.
That is very technical. I haven't even heard about it. I don't even know what property economics would be about. I thought it would just be, you know, the look and working out the big macro economy of property, but obviously it's a lot more detailed than that.
The construction management degree certainly was, but I mean, based on what I do today, I mean, we have to sort of estimate during doing the tax depreciation sort of things, but really like all of the main sort of information that I've got under my sort of fast growing grey hair is outside of the degree. I mean, it's giving me the estimating fundamentals, but I learned nothing about tax depreciation during that construction management degree, which is a bit weird. That's my qualification, but a big chunk of it is just like you couldn't get it there.
The managing director goes on to talk about the stage where he decided to delve into quantity surveying.
I was studying a Bachelor of Construction Management while I was working for a quantity surveying firm. So there was a bunch of us doing that degree at the same time. So that was good. We had a bit of camaraderie. So we were all pretty much doing full-time work and full-time study load. So that was pretty epic. But, you know, I didn't have much else going on. So it was just, you know, smash it out sort of thing. And I was thinking, like, if I don't get a uni degree now, it'll never happen. And I was lamenting not going straight to uni after, year 11 and 12 straight away. So, yeah, got that done and then worked with that business and ended up being one of the sort of co-managers of the tax team. And then learnt my trade craft. And that's when I sort of made the decision to move on with that arrogant notion that I thought I could do it better, you know.
And you have, you know, I think you've done very, very well, especially, you know, for that time, because a lot of businesses usually for the first 2 or 3 years when they first start don't make it. So you've already passed that stage and you guys are almost, a decade into business. So that's great news.
I can remember, I think it cost me and Marty about $7,000 each to start the business. So, you know, massive capital investment. And I can remember when we first got that back after a week or a month or whatever, I'm like, yes, milestone one hit. I haven't sunk money into a business that died. And then it just kind of incrementally went from there with a few funny things along the way.
Delving into his property investing journey, he goes on to talk about the first property he ever purchased.
I purchased my first property in a place called Waratah, which is sort of right near the Newcastle Uni area, which has done pretty well from a capital growth point of view for that reason. It's about, depends on the traffic. It used to be a $10 cab fare to any restaurant in Newcastle, but now I've got an index for, I think it might be 20 now. It's, you know, under normal traffic circumstances, it's 10 or 15 minutes sort of into the CBD. And that was a place that I knew I wanted to get into property. I ended up that was the principal place of residence, but also I rented out the front section of it. So it was a 2-bedroom place that I converted into 3-bedder. And I wouldn't say there was much sophistication going into that investment property, but I was interested in the stuff that I learned in valuation, the highest and best use, about, you know, comparable sales, if you're comparing 2-bedders to 3-bedders and, you know, the 3-bedders are worth an extra 80 grand. Well, if I can make my 2 into 3 for 10 or 12 grand, then that's going to work, right? So I was living with a flatmate and I bought that house and basically picked up the keys and said, all right, I'm off to Thailand for 14 days and let him deal with a rat's nest that was found in the backyard, carpet that was probably a breach of his human rights. It was pretty rough.
Okay, go tell me about this story. This is getting interesting.
Well, I just kind of thought I'd never really bought anything much before, but in that week, I basically bought a holiday to Thailand, wrote off a $10,000 car because my insurance had lapsed. I missed out on that, so basically just set fire to 10 grand. So, you know, this is not an inspirational financial story if you haven't got that already. And bought this property, which I think I paid 230 grand. It was a 2-bed that had a weird sort of setup that I knew I could turn it into 3, but I'd have to cut a hole in sort of the front wall, which was actually external. So at the beginning, my flatmate agreed to sort of move with me into this new place, and he just ended up paying the same rent that we were both sort of sharing at this other place. And yeah, in fairness to him, that probably was not fair. It was a bit of a step back. And I thought, oh, the house is right. But when I got back, he's like, dude, you don't know what I've had to deal with while you've been, you know, off in Thailand. And I'm like, oh, well, some of like the days we had to be in the back of a truck on a dirt road. And he's like, no, don't even.
He shares what happened at that particular point with his roommate and whether they resolved the tension.
We're still mates. He ended up having what I can only describe as an illegal bonfire in the backyard to get rid of the jungle and the rat's nest that was in some sort of, you know, concrete barbecue thing. Thankfully he was there looking after that. He had a few parties with his mates and, you know, there were a few cans lying around when I got back. But, you know, I kind of thought on balance, like, you do whatever you like. Yeah. Like, just look after the place.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then, like, him and I were met because we were both dating sisters. So I've got to clarify that because I don't want it to sound like, oh gee, like this is really, he really is from the country. I don't mean, no one was related in this story apart from the sisters. So there was an older and a younger sister, and he was dating the younger sister and I was dating the older sister. And we met through that and ended up living together. And that was kind of cool because, you know, we all had sort of stuff in common. I sort of was stopped going out with the older sister sort of not long after buying that house. Maybe it was the rats. I don't know. Chicks don't really dig it, I guess. That's what I learned. I think it might have been a little bit before, actually. But so his girlfriend was coming over, and at that time my two bedroom that I turned into three did have three bedrooms, but it necessitated him coming through my bedroom to get to his bedroom. So it was kind of like all sorts of weird, like there was like an impromptu towel rail that we put up as a bit of a privacy barrier. He really did put up with a lot. I should probably go and drop off a bottle or something to him.
I'm loving that story. That is so hilarious. Good friends, you know, always look out for each other. So I'm pretty sure he sounds like a very good friend.
For anyone that sort of looks at someone like me and thinks like the life is glamorous or anything like that, I don't know if anyone does that, maybe just my mum. It's certainly pretty rough and ready. There's no silver spoon in the mouth. And whilst I'm, you know, comfortable now, it was definitely wasn't handed.
Mortlock reveals if he still owns that property today after a disastrous turn of events.
Oh, I wish I did. I still drive past it and I think, no, I ended up selling that for, I think it was around, it was 350 something. So it worked out about like an 8% return per year. So, I mean, that was pretty good, but I really wanted to keep it. But I ended up purchasing a property with my wife, and by selling that, we could get a little bit further to what we wanted. In hindsight, it was probably a mistake, but I mean, like, there's sort of financial decisions and then there's life. And I think, like, people ring me up sometimes and say, well, what investment property should I buy for tax depreciation? And I say, well, it's an apartment in a complex of 600 with 8 gyms and 14 pools. And they're like, that sounds like a terrible investment. And I say, yes, it is. But that's not the question you asked me. You didn't say, what's a good investment? So I'm like, don't do things just because of the tax reason, or don't do everything because of finances. So, I mean, maybe that's my excuse for that. But
it's the truth, though, because we all are human and we have some form of emotional lifestyle choices that we make. The whole reason why we do invest into property is just a vehicle that to get to our lifestyle or the choices that we want in our life. You know, if we didn't do that, then what's the purpose of investing into property? Is it just to have more money sitting in the bank? I don't think so.
I'm not really interested in money at all. Like, I think I'm interested in freedom. Like, everything I own is kind of cheap and worn out. My one weakness is I do like European motor vehicles. Apart from that, I'm like blemish free, right? You know, and that doesn't make me a bad person. That's just like a coincidence.
Inspired by Mike Mortlock's journey, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Investory, where we'll hear about the moment where everything just clicked for him.
I haven't had any like real sort of Rubicon moments or transformative sort of things happen, but one thing that I thought about was when I first discovered that there was a whole world out there that I didn't realize.
The reason why he started investing in property as well as building his business?
The goal really evolved to being more about the freedom. Like I mentioned before, just the ability to do anything that I want to do as a passion project and be able to provide for the family as well.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Invest Story.